You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica Toku Ingoa no my haere mai ki te wire, mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rahina Monday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined in studio by producer Ezra. E whai aki nei coming up on the show. Te Pāti Māori's Takutai Camp is unfortunately unavailable again, but for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party, I speak to Simon Court about the government's proposal to fast-track the resource consents process for significant regional and national projects. I also speak to Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki, chairperson and former Green MP, Catherine De La Hunte, and Climate Justice Taranaki spokesperson Urs Singer about the government's new fast-track consenting proposal. And I speak to Associate Professor in Anthropology at the University of Auckland and Director of the James Henare Research Centre, Marama Muru Lanning, Waikato Ngāti Maniapoto Ngāti Whātua, and Senior Research Fellow at the James Henare Research Centre, Dr. Hilary Latsley, about the government disestablishing Te Whai Aka Ora, the Māori Health Authority. Te Aka Whai Ora, apologies. Ezra, what have you got for us today?
A black market for vapes has emerged in New Zealand schools, according to a report by the Asthma and Respiratory Foundation New Zealand. I spoke to vape educator Sharon, who shared valuable insights into this pressing issue.
He aha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces today. So get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395 or wire mai rane, give us a call in studio on 309-3879. Ka awa i wariwari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki eni kororo anohi pakihiri, roki roki maoranga i te pai tuku tuku o Irirangi Poho, mi haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. And you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
The coalition government has announced a fast-track consenting bill, which would speed up the consenting process for regional and national projects of significance, giving ministers decision-making power over the consents process. According to Minister for RMA Reform, Chris Bishop, the proposed fast-track consenting law would be a one-stop shop for major infrastructure approvals currently gained under the Resource Management Act. However, the government has not ruled out whether the legislation will be used to approve mining, conservation or wildlife projects. For our weekly interview, ex-Simon Court defended their policy. So I wanted to talk to you about the fast-tracking consents bill. So what changes are the government making under the fast-track consenting process for regional and national projects of significance?
Well, there's already a fast-track process that is a leftover from the previous government's COVID-19 fast-tracking, when it became clear that trying to get major projects through consenting was taking years longer than we needed to and costing far more. So what the coalition government's fast-tracking bill does is build on that, but also provide for projects to be referred by a minister to an expert consenting panel who will produce the environmental controls, the consent conditions that otherwise an environment court would.
So who will make up this expert panel?
Well, the people who will be on the panel will need to have a specific experience relative to the project, How they will be selected will have to be determined as we work through the legislative process. But I would expect there'll be people who, you know, if it's a consent application that involves fresh water, they will have some experience dealing with freshwater science, for example.
But ultimately, ministers will have decision-making power over consents. So can you give us an idea of what kinds of projects could be approved?
Well, there have been some major transport projects, such as East-West Link in Auckland, which was intended, when it was first proposed, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, to get heavy trucks off local roads around Onehunga and East Auckland. Those trucks are currently trundled through the suburbs on their way to Port of Auckland and put them onto a specially designed heavy traffic road, just a two-lane road, that would connect them from Onehunga to the southern motorway. Now, that project has been sitting in Supreme Court, I understand, and in negotiation for quite a few years. And so it's regarded as necessary. It's important to get heavy trucks off the road so that we can redevelop that part of Auckland. And it's a project that should probably proceed with the right environmental consent conditions. So that's the kind of project that is likely to be referred. But the actual list of projects hasn't been determined. It will be determined in a parallel process once those criteria are determined.
What about seabed mining? Is that something that the government would consider approving consents for?
Well, again, we haven't developed the criteria for project eligibility. It's quite clear that all forms of mining have environmental impacts. I think one of the challenges New Zealand's resource management system has thrown up to us is that it's really not capable of balancing environmental impacts against economic and social opportunity. The RMA places very little weight on value for money, for example, or economic growth and social opportunity from the kind of projects which some people might say have a negative impact on the environment. But one thing I would point out about any form of mining, its effects are temporary. I've been to a number of mine sites in the South Island and North Island where the environmental restoration has achieved a much higher standard of biodiversity than the surrounding dockland where the actual mine is located. So we know it's possible to restore nature. And I think, you know, what New Zealand needs right now is a focus on improved productivity and economic performance, so that we can generate the wealth that pays for all the other things we need, like health and education services.
Would that extend to mining on conservation land? And are you confident that an advisory group would recommend mining on conservation land as only having temporary effects on the environment?
Well, we know that mining on conservation land, of which there are, I think, maybe 200 permits currently in operation, some for very, very large mines that have decades and decades of life left ahead of them. We know that the environmental consenting conditions will protect the environment and will set out very clearly what the expectations are to restore those sites at the end of their life. One in particular I'd refer your listeners to is the Oceania Globe Progress Mine in Reefton, where they have planted tens of millions of seedlings. And they even preserved the tree stumps from trees on a site that were felled over 100 years ago, put them to one side, and when they carried out remediation, they dotted the tree stumps around the site as hidey holes for creatures. I think mining companies want to retain their social license. They would only be offering conditions to a panel that they felt that they could meet, and they can demonstrate they already do meet.
Is the government ruling out projects previously rejected by the Environment Court on the grounds that they would cause too much environmental harm?
Look, the conditions or criteria for projects to be included in a recommendation for fast-track approval haven't been determined yet, so I can't confirm that.
So it's not being ruled out?
Look, what New Zealanders have asked for, that's why they voted for this coalition government, is a focus on improved productivity and economic performance. That will not come at the expense of the environment, but it's quite clear that the Resource Management Act and decision makers under that act have not delivered what New Zealand needs in terms of that balance of economy, social uplift, which is, you know, what big projects, big developments, big infrastructure does. It enables communities to improve their well-being, and the effects on the environment, many of which during construction phase, for example, operations of a mine, are actually temporary. Like, whereas, you know, building a subdivision and putting houses on it, it's kind of permanent. So all of these things can be better balanced. But beyond the fast track, the ultimate goal is to replace the Resource Management Act with a system based on property rights and the environment to be improved by having a system of environmental limits that all of these activities need to be carried out within. That's quite a different approach from the integrated management, sustainable development approach that the RMA has set out, and which just hasn't worked for our environment, let alone our economy and communities.
As the climate change spokesperson for ACT in particular, do you have any concerns about environmental impacts that these kinds of projects could have?
Well, I think that we have a big challenge with climate policy now. The previous government spent a lot of effort, money and time on corporate welfare, subsidising big business like steel companies and dairy companies to pay them to replace energy systems with electric boilers and so on. New Zealand can't afford to do that. But more importantly, any investment we do make in climate change really should be focused on climate adaptation. That's the signal that this government has sent. That's a direction that I would propose. And we only have to look to last year's floods in Auckland and Cyclone Gabrielle's effects in Hawke's Bay and East Coast to see that if we do identify places that are exposed to natural hazards, you know, exacerbated by climate change, then we should invest in making sure people are safe with stop banks, coastal protection works, particularly around big assets. And we should also make sure that there's space for the water to go. And that might mean, particularly in cities, that homes and businesses and infrastructure built in the way of floods does need to move. That really should be the primary focus going forward. And the fast track legislation should enable much more balanced decisions to be made around building things in coastal areas, building things in river environments. You know, the choice between protecting assets, protecting communities, or moving them should become much easier. And of course, that's also the ultimate goal of replacing the resource management system with a system based on property rights, which is another coalition commitment from this term of government.
The Green Party's co-leader, or outgoing co-leader, James Shaw, has described this bill as one of the most significant assaults on the environment undertaken by any government that he has seen. Would you be able to stand by the fact that environmental standards in Aotearoa will not be degraded under this new policy?
Look, there is nothing worse than the Resource Management Act for our environment. What we've seen over the past 30 years, or since 1991 when that act was passed, you know, based off our Rio and sustainable development goals in the 1980s, with this laudable outcome to have integrated management of effects and activities and achieve sustainable development somehow, a term which has never been adequately discovered, no matter how hard we've tried to define it. And yet we've seen massive over-allocation of nutrients to many catchments around New Zealand, a massive over-abstraction of water from a whole lot of catchments that are under stress. At the same time, the RMA makes it almost impossible to build a water storage dam that actually might allow more water to be left in the rivers and the aquifers. So it's certainly clear the RMA has failed. The Fast Track Bill, is all it's trying to do is help New Zealand catch up on the last three wasted years of the previous Labor government, saying no to things so we can actually start delivering some projects that New Zealand needs and the communities need. Of course, the ultimate goal, and this is something in my delegation as the Undersecretary to the Minister for RMA Reform, is to replace the Resource Management Act with a system based on property rights where the environment is better managed through a system of environmental limits or guardrails, which currently we don't have. Now, I studied as an environmental scientist and engineer. I worked in that area for nearly 23 years, as well as civil engineering. I want to make sure that the legacy this government leaves behind is one of a better environment, but more productivity and a healthier economy too.
That was ACT's Simon Court on the government's proposed fast-track consents law.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
Irirangi Pōhō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire, 95BFM's news and current affairs show. I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces today. Keep the texts coming. Text in on 5395. Following the government announcing its fast-track consents bill, which gives ministers ultimate authority on whether to approve significant projects, environmental groups have raised concerns these proposed laws will undermine environmental protections. First, I spoke to Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki chairperson and former Green MP Catherine Della Hunty about how the bill could affect protected areas in the Coromandel. What is your reaction to the government's proposed changes to the fast-track consenting process for regional and national projects of significance?
It's hideous. So if you want to see what dictatorship looks like, we now have that in resource management. And I don't know how many people saw Chris Bishop on Sunday program, but it was very clear that there's no place for public participation. There's no place for environmental groups with concerns. There's no place for anybody except a small panel of experts who are only allowed to set conditions on proposed projects under the fast track, and they cannot even reject those projects. They can only set conditions. It's taking us back to well before the 1970s, and for those of us who've been fighting for my area, it's particularly horrible because the Act, the Fast Track Bill, as it is at the moment, specifically targets our area and takes away the protection under what is known as Schedule 4 of the Crown Minerals Act, which was no mining north of Kōpū, no open cast mining north of Kōpū near Thames here. And now they've taken all, we fought for that. We created that protection in the 1990s and they've taken it all away. So to say that we're angry and gutted is an understatement.
How significant is this change in comparison to previous governments? This bill has been compared to Muldoon's era legislation. So what have we seen like this in recent times?
I think it's been a long time since we've had anything so draconian. The Labor Party, the Labor government had just brought in the natural something rather bill, which I've lost track of, which was to replace the RME, and they also reduced public participation and set up expert panels, but they didn't permanently prevent people from being heard. So we haven't seen this for a very long time. So when we talk about Muldoon, that's one example. I would actually use the example of 1984 when the Roger Douglas cabal of neoliberals took over government, because what's happening is not only are people now fighting this issue, but there's a blitzkrieg of issues that's attacking the treaty, attacking the community, attacking health, attacking Te Reo, attacking the environment. Like through this one, there's so much going on at once and people are reeling, and that's how it's done when you want to force through changes that are basically really unpopular, and they're doing it and they don't care that they don't have a mandate.
How has the government justified its ability to do this?
So I was in Parliament for 9 years. Urgency is always used. It's supposed to be used for things like, you know, say a pandemic when we're in crisis, or a Christchurch earthquake, or legislation. Some urgency was used for that. But both the major parties have used it for issues they don't want publicly debated, because what it means is it stops select committees. Now, for a fast-track bill, there will be a select committee, but a lot of other horrible bills have been forced through in recent weeks. For example, the destruction of the Māori Health Authority and the tobacco laws, that didn't have a select committee. We will get a select committee, but the coalition government will have the majority on it, so we won't be able to change things significantly. And this is really undemocratic. What they're doing is really undemocratic in the sense that they're taking away people's rights to be heard in court. So there's no opportunity to use the normal legal processes that we've done for years. And their justification is we must extract everything, we must make money. And really it's about them and their foreign investors and backers. The people who are going to make money out of a hell for leather approach to the environment. The people who want to keep mining coal despite the climate crisis, rip up the gold and put it in banks overseas. It is not going to benefit us. And the risks to water, the risks with things like seabed mining, the tangata whenua of Taranaki have fought so hard, and all of this is being taken away. And it's absolutely draconian, and it is really important now that people join together to understand and support the fight against this project, because all we're left with is direct action protest and mass mobilisation.
When I was speaking to the ACT Party this morning, their representative, Simon Court, said that mining does not have long-term environmental effects. What would you say to this?
Honestly, what does he know? We've been working with the effects of mining from last century are still affecting the area here. We have got vast tailings dams full of toxic waste created for the Waihi gold mines in Waihi, and we're at risk because of climate change. If there was a weather bomb, we would have devastating effects. The small mines we've cleaned up in this area, and I was just talking to the regional council about this, the smaller mine that closed in the 1970s cost us $20 million, and it's not even as big as a rugby field. These are vast areas that now have toxic waste all over them. The risks to water, the risks to the Hariki Gulf, with those mines, the risk to communities of living with constant blasting under the town of Waihi, he just does not know what he's talking about. One of the greatest problems with mining is the legacy effects and who pays for them, because the mining companies leave and then the communities have to pay. And we're in the 21st century with a biodiversity and climate crisis. The mine they want to open up behind Waihi at the place called Whareterauponga is the home of the 200 million year old species, one of the rarest and most endangered frogs on the planet, and they want to blast underneath that 24/7 so they can rip the gold out and no one benefits.
Do you think it's possible to promote sustainable management of natural and physical resources while also having economic prosperity as a goal?
Yeah, I mean, it's about how you define prosperity. If you're talking about prosperity, including the prosperity of the natural world that feeds us, there is many things we can do to build a prosperous and healthy society. We can grow healthy food. We can be the world's most natural and most regenerative farming producer. We can produce many industries do not require that we trash the environment. We just have to have good rules, and the rules have to be clear about who benefits and how are we going to ensure our bottom line. The environment is the economy. That's the bottom line.
2-3 years from now, when we're heading into another election, when the public will get another opportunity to vote, what do you anticipate could be if a policy like this is introduced to what you would see as having its worst effect?
Well, I think at the next election, what we need are the only parties I trust is the Party Māori and the Greens. And if they get up, and I'd love to see Labor join that group, but I haven't heard much from them about this. What we need to see is that the fast track law will be repealed, that will actually create a system which is fair, which allows people, tangata and tauiwi katoa, to be heard in the community, and that any of these fast track projects that have been consented without any public process by the minister will lose that consent and will have to reapply. I don't think we can just allow these people to carry on because a random government which has been with a tail, which is a vicious tail of the coalition, is running a heartless dog, which is the national government. I don't think we can let that carry on, and there have to be consequences and it has to be stopped. And so I'm really hopeful that even before the next election, we can mobilise enough people to let them know that this is politically unacceptable. A little promo. So on Saturday at Karangahake Gorge, a beautiful area for cycling and walking, we're holding a rally. Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki is holding a rally against the fast track bill and against the mining that's happening in that area from 12 o'clock on. And we welcome everybody from the BFM audience. We welcome everybody. Come down, bring a picnic, have a lovely day, listen to us talking and have a little walk with us in the forest, because we really need the help of our wonderful people in the cities to understand what we have to lose. And so that's 12 o'clock this Saturday at Karangahake, and we'd love to see anybody there who is interested in supporting this issue.
I also asked Climate Justice Taranaki spokesperson Urs Singer for their thoughts on the bill.
Well, our group is horrified at the proposed fast-track bill that came out a few days ago, pushed by the coalition government. And we think it's a really stupid move, given that we're in the middle of a climate crisis, to push through this bill that ultimately will see more damage to the environment and more damage to communities. So it's really a disaster in the making, this bill. And it's a shame that we have to still, in 2024, fight these kind of initiatives. But it just shows that the government wants to try and bring Muldoon back to life. And a lot of people have sort of compared this proposed bill with a bill that was drafted in 1979 called the National Development Act, which is probably a while ago for many of your listeners, including myself too, obviously. But that's kind of the bill that gave us the Think Big era of Muldoon, the so-called Think Big initiatives of trying to attract big industry to Aotearoa in the hope that it will get us out of an economic troubles. And, of course, it didn't. It just created more environmental damage. So it's kind of going back to that era of Muldoon, and it's really scary to think that the government is going down that path rather than investing in communities and investing in solutions that actually bring down our emissions. We're going down the track of just propping up failed industries.
What potential projects that could now be approved are you particularly concerned about?
I guess part of the problem is that we don't really know what's on this list. Like, they talk about 100 potential projects, but there's certainly been indications by several of the ministers what they're talking about. Chris Bishop and Shane Jones in particular have have alluded to mining and to kind of more hydro dams and to more industry. Those kind of projects are in the pipeline. So the ones that obviously we're concerned about are the ones that impact on climate change. We all know we need to urgently bring our emissions down. 50% of Aotearoa's emissions come directly from the dairy industry, from industrial dairy. So those are most of the methane emissions from cows, but also the emissions associated with the production of the milk powder that's then exported overseas. So it's any kind of projects that prop up that industry that really we need to move away from that kind of model of doing agriculture. We need to move away from industrial agriculture and move towards regenerative approaches to producing kai, kai that's actually feeding communities rather than kai that's just an export commodity. But at the same time, we're particularly worried about any kind of proposals that will make it easier for companies to start mining operations. At the moment, we're fighting a company called TTR, Trans-Tasman Resources, that have applied again to the EPA to start iron sand mining offshore off South Taranaki. We've actually got a hearing starting in Hawera this week in front of the EPA. This is not a new application. This company has been trying for several years to get approval by the EPA to mine the seafloor for minerals. They talk about iron sand, but they're actually after another mineral called vanadium. So it's those kind of projects alongside, say, gold mining in the Coromandel or further exploration for oil and gas, both in Taranaki and elsewhere, that they will likely get the go-ahead under this bill so that it's just under by the discretion of the minister to make decisions. And that's a really scary process that basically shuts out iwi and hapu, shuts out community groups. It stops the whole kind of democratic or democratic-ish process that allows people to engage with those kind of proposals. So those are our main concerns. It's the projects that enable climate polluters to keep going, and projects like mining, both onshore and offshore, that really could have disastrous effects on the local and global environment.
Speaking of iwi and hapu, what does this, in your opinion, indicate about the government's commitment to meeting its obligations to Te Tiriti?
Yeah, great point. And I mean, Tangata Whenua Māori are already organising up and down the country and have been for the last few months around the response to the government with these kotahi tangahui that started in Tūranga Waiwai in January, then went on to Rātana and up to Waitangi Nahi. Another hui is proposed to take place in Ngāti Kahununu in a couple of months' time. So there's a lot of discussion around how to respond to the government. Obviously, Māori have, and Tauhui supporters, have a lot of fights on our hands. That's, for example, the disestablishment of the Māori Health Authority. It's the attacks on Te Reo Māori. It's all the kind of rhetoric, the right-wing rhetoric that ACT and New Zealand First have been pushing for years now. But also Māori have been strong advocates for the environment. I mean, it's Ngāti Ruanui here in South Taranaki together with Ngā Rauru that have been fighting this seabed mining application from the get-go. They've been the most vocal opponents in organising in the community to stop this company from getting into the door here in Taranaki. And the same goes for oil and gas explorations. It's always been Tangata Whenua that have been holding the line opposing oil and gas here in Taranaki. So, yeah, it's huge. It's a big mess. And so a lot of us are taking time to read the bill, and a lot of us will need to make submissions. We have until the 19th of April to make submissions on the fast-track bill. So anyone listening who's worried about what the government's proposing, there are opportunities to engage in their process. I say their process because we have other processes too of resistance. That is marches in the street, just like the climate strike that's coming up on the 5th of April. We can organise in that community. We can engage in non-violent direct action like we have done for decades as a movement, as an environmental movement, but also as social justice activists. So there's avenues to engage and encourage us, all of us, to be involved and get engaged. We cannot disengage. We cannot let this government get away with what they're planning at the moment. Yes, we can talk about what happens in 2.5 years' time in another election, but so much damage can be done, and it's our obligation to stand up for communities and for the environment right now.
Do you think it's possible for the government to ensure sustainable management of our natural and physical resources while also having economic prosperity as a goal?
It's totally possible, but their approach is not aligned with finding that balance at all. You know, we have to find solutions that provide economic justice, is what I would say. But at the moment, what the government's proposing is economic prosperity for the few at the top, while the rest of us will be forever stuck in a rat race within the capitalist paradigm. You know, they're creating tax cuts for their rich mates. They're making it easier for landlords who, you know, own 200 investment properties to make life for us renters even more miserable. So their economic model is based on a few at the top will be well off while the rest of us struggle. And so obviously their environmental solutions are stuck in their paradigm, in a paradigm that is where nature is just a commodity, just something that can be exploited, just like people to them are just a commodity that can be exploited. Our labor can just be bought and sold, just like trees and minerals and oil and gas and emissions can be bought and sold. So I guess what we're saying is we need a whole economic paradigm shift if we want to actually talk about sustainability, because capitalism has demonstrated for the last couple of hundred years that it is incapable of creating a sustainable future for our mokopuna. So I guess we're talking about economic justice, and economic justice requires a shift in our capitalist model because it's exploitative and it's destructive.
And that was Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki chairperson Catherine Delahunty and Climate Justice Taranaki spokesperson Urs Signer on the government's proposal to fast-track infrastructure projects.
The Wire.
The Asthma and Respiratory Foundation has released research describing a black market for vapes emerging in schools across New Zealand. The foundation has raised concerns about the role of the government, schools and regulators in protecting the health of school students. I spoke to Foundation's Māori Community Liaison Officer Sharon Pihima, who conducts workshops educating students on the harms of vaping across Aotearoa. Here is their interview.
Could you please speak on what factors have led to the rise of black market vapes in schools?
Yeah, I think it's because I do a lot of my mahi in schools delivering workshops to students, just giving them some good information around the harms of vaping. And it's quite interesting because a few of the teachers or the principals, sometimes the students themselves, will say that they know of other students who bring vapes to school to sell. I was at a primary school recently and one of the teachers told me that the day that I was there doing workshops, they had bought a student who was trying to sell vapes to the other kids in the class.
Could you speak on what obstacles this government might have working with organisations such as your foundation and how organisations such as the foundation might work with policymakers to overcome such barriers?
Yeah, I think the challenge has been that a lot of the regulations that we have at the moment heavily favour the industry itself. We've always advocated for stronger regulations around vaping, right back from when they were first being marketed and introduced here, sort of 2017, 2018. So we're going on over 5 years now where we have advocated and pushed for the government to take a stronger stance. And it's been quite frustrating because the regulations that we have just haven't been enough to curb the uptake of vaping by our rangatahi and our tamariki. And now we're seeing kind of the results of that, and that, you know, there are a lot of teenagers who have an addiction to nicotine from vaping, who may have never smoked a cigarette before and gone straight on to vaping and become addicted to nicotine that way. And now we're even starting to see that kind of thing happening with our primary school students, which is really scary and really sad at the same time because we could have avoided a lot of the situation that we're in at the moment.
That was Asthma and Respiratory Foundation Māori Community Liaison Officer Sharon Pihima on an emerging black market for vapes.
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Six, 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 six. So you changed your mind real quick, huh? One minute we'll find next thing you don't know. How am I to deal with this shit? Why do I lie to myself when I'm on? And maybe this is not what I need. Maybe I don't think you mean to be mean, but you're really putting on a show for me.
Be
and
serious.
It's a thriller, not a fantasy.
Come on.
What you mean you don't want me no more? Riding on the MP, hard on the sleeve of my coat. Chill, I've been feeling like I was the only one. That could be your day one, the main one that's ready. Say go before you count the one, my shining sun. I'm stacking funds, but if I can't spend it with you, well, then I don't want none. Who better, baby? Tears washing canals. I know you meant what you said, but the words just foul.
Ice, you put it all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Falling out of every time you roast me. Like it's all gone. Ice all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Falling under every time you roast me. Next minute in your arms like it's all gone.
Only two seasons where I come from, that spring and summer.
Shit.
And that show that you giving ain't nothing, babe. I'm on freezer mode. Touchdown in your city, we won't speak.
How you be so cold?
I don't know. Trip to Copenhagen gave me frosty souls.
Hey, I tried to call
never doubt my tone if it ain't about no dough.
Stop.
How many times you missed my show? How many times I said it's calm and never rang alarms on you in hopes of one day getting warm? Shit.
Be serious. Come on.
Ice, you put it all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Falling under every time you go sleep. Next minute in your arms like it's all gone. Ice, all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Like it's all gone. You put it all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Falling under every time you roast me. Next standing in your arms like it's all gone. Ice all on me. Hot and cold, you're so indecisive. Falling under every time you roast me. Next standing in your arms like it's all gone.
Stop.
Sorry, Mittens, our plan has failed.
Why couldn't she just forget me? All I want is to be a street cat.
We'll need a new plan.
I've got it. All we need is a realistic life-size cutout of me.
First, we'll need the perfect photo. I'll head to ProGear. Oh, yes, perfect. More paw. Lovely. You're a natural.
ProGear Photographic. For photos so crisp, you'll think they aren't photos. Head to ProGear for all your photography needs. Open now at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or go to progear.co.nz.
Get into the flow state with functional mushrooms. Flow state has a range of adaptogenic organic mushroom extracts to help put you in whatever zone you need. Including lion's mane for focus and brain function, cordyceps for athletic performance, and reishi for overall health. Available in supplement form or as a powder for mixing. Third party tested for safety and potency. For more info, go to flowstate.nz.
There has never been a better month to touch grass because EcoFest is coming.
You can win an EcoFest prize pack, which includes a Grow Your Own Sustainable Vegetable Garden online course.
And a hand-printed Zero Waste EcoFest t-shirt made from a pre-loved garment. Priceless.
Just listen in to Drive all week for your chance to enter.
EcoFest, March 15th till April 14th. Discover what's on at ecofest.org.nz.
I can't believe you've done this.
What?
I was telling Denise about that one time that you hung out with the Beths at the Silver Scrolls.
And that was our secret.
And she said that she'd heard the same story on 95 BFM Breakfast.
I can explain.
Now I find out our anniversary mixtape was just the show playlist from last Thursday.
Honey, it's a coincidence.
Look me in the eye and tell me. You've never even met Rick Breeze, have you?
Don't make me not like this.
It's over.
The secret's out. 95 BFM Breakfast with Rachel and producer Stella. Everything you need to kickstart your morning. Weekdays 7 till 10 a.m. only on 95 BFM.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Last month, the government announced Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority would be disestablished just 18 months after it launched. I spoke to Associate Professor in Anthropology at the University of Auckland and Director of the James Hirare Māori Research Centre, Marama Muru Lanning, Waikato Ngāti Maniapoto Ngāti Whātua, as well as research fellow at the James Henare Māori Research Centre, Dr. Hilary Lapsley, about the government's decision and its impact on Kaumātua. What was your reaction to the government disestablishing Te Aka Whai Ora?
Absolute disappointment. Disappointment and anger, I have to add. But it came at the time when they were doing away with so many other Māori initiatives, for example, making smoking possible all over the place now, doing away with co-governance of water, and then, of course, the attack on Te Reo Māori. So this just came at a time when we were really being walked over by the government.
Te Aka Whai Ora was an amazing initiative, and it was recommended by the Waitangi Tribunal investigation into Māori health, which found that the system just does not suit Māori, and here was an opportunity to do something that had never been done before, and it's just been closed off before it's had a chance to make a difference.
There's been a lot of talk about health equity from our government. Why do both or either of you believe a Māori-centric approach to addressing Māori health outcomes is important?
Take you on a little journey. In 2021, the James Henare Research Centre held its first noho wānanga for a big piece of health research we were doing with Waikato Kaumātua in the Tainui Novotel in Kirikiriroa, Hamilton. And on the day that we did our first noho wānanga, which was to look at the Kaumātua wellbeing and health, it was announced by one of our participants, Taitimu Maipi, that they were going to establish a Māori health authority. So it was a day of absolute jubilation for the 15 Kaumātua that we had working with us, and it made our job so meaningful because there was such excitement. They composed a haka because they finally felt that they were going to get some equity, they were going to get some funding, and they were going to be able to create a health system or methods that were really going to suit them and their mokopuna. So they were very forward-thinking, and there was just such an excitement at this time because this group of people were descendants and affiliated to the great Princess Te Puia, who was a Waikato leader, and it was her dream always to have a Māori hospital. And so this notion of having a Māori health authority was just bringing her dream to life.
Yes, when we took our report back to them a year later, they laid down a challenge to us to help facilitate the idea of a Māori hospital, because the stories we heard from them and from other areas that we've studied is that Māori don't feel safe often in hospitals today, and they don't perform very well for Māori according to quite a number of research studies. There we have it, a new idea.
So most of what's been lost over the last 100 years or so of Māori not being able to provide their own for their own health is that there is absolutely no trust in the health providers that they have now. And they feel that their unique situations are not taken into consideration when developing health. And what we found out through our study is that one type of health does not fit all, one size does not fit all, and that's been the beauty of us working with six different groups around the North Island. So we've worked with people from Te Rāroa in the far north, also people from the Hukianga. When I say people, I mean Kaumātua and Kuia. We've also worked with Kaumātua and Kuia from Ngāti Whātua. Another group from Te Kai o Te Waka, which is all the marae around the Manukau Harbour. We've also worked with Waikato, which was our first group we worked with, and then also Kaumātua and Kuia from Tauranga Moana, although they call themselves Pakeke. So what we've learnt through these six different sites is that, on a whole, they've all had a very terrible experience of health in Aotearoa. Not only them, but their parents, and now their mokopuna are also having a bad experience in our health system. And so the one thing they were all jubilant about was this notion of having a Māori health authority, which later became known as Te Aka Whai Ora, and also just this notion that Māori tikanga would be the framework that would guide how the health system would work. Now that has been taken away. So the dreams and aspirations of so many Kaumātua, Māori whānau, Hapuri, it's just been pretty much struck out with the establishment of this bill last week.
What does it mean now for the James Henare Research Centre and your project with Komatua now that the authority has been disestablished?
Well, it means that we have to fight on. We are champions. And so in our study, we've worked with more than 120 Komatua in the 7 years that we've been on this kaupapa, with working with Komatua in the wellbeing space. And we've lost a lot of people. People have passed away because we're dealing with people who are in their 60s plus. And, of course, no one lives forever. So we have a challenge put before us to carry on and champion their desire to have a Māori health authority and to have tinoranga tiratanga for Māori in the health space. Now, interestingly enough, today, in about half an hour's time, the whole team here from James Henare Research Centre, including our chair, Bernard Henare, who is the son of Sir James Henare, the namesake of our research centre, we will all be hopping in two cars and travelling to the far north to meet with a group of Komatua from Roma Morai to discuss this disestablishment and to think of we're going to do a shared letter and write back to the government and tell them exactly how disappointed we are and what they've actually done by doing this. And this series of hui that we will have up north will also include our advisory board meeting at Motuti Morai. So while we're coming to the end of our health Research Council funded project with the six sites, we're still carrying the torch and we will still continue to fight for the rights of Komatua to have better health and to get their Māori health system going. And I think there was one Komatua that said if they have to protest and if they have to get out there, they'll do so in their wheelchairs and they'll walk, or they won't be walking, I guess they'll be pushing their wheelchairs to Wellington. But that's how strong the desire is to see this initiative go forward. Perhaps not underneath this government, but there will be other governments that come after this government.
Health Minister Dr. Shane Reddy has said that their government will deliver more on Māori health than the previous government. Do you have confidence in this claim?
Well, I'm not going to speak personally, but I can tell you and I can assure you that across the board, most of our Komatua participants are not very happy with Dr. Reti at the moment. They really feel that he has killed all their dreams and aspirations, and it's just really very disappointing that he doesn't see what they see and that he doesn't have the heart for another plan for Māori health that they dream of.
Yeah, speaking of another plan, do either of you have recommendations for the government on how they can ensure they meet the health needs of Māori, particularly Komatua?
Well, how about listening to them? That's the first thing. Maybe listen to them, because everybody, and we know this from the Hui Amutu that happened on the 20th of January, everyone came together when King Tuheitia asked for us to stand together and speak back to the government. And Māori did in unison. Not only Māori, there were other Tauiwi groups there as well at the Hui Amutu. And if they didn't get the message from that hui, I don't know, you know, they must have earplugs, because if they're not listening to that huge kaupapa, which is continuing now, I mean, I just think they're not really wanting to listen. We do know that overseas, well, in Alaska, for example, there is an Indigenous hospital. It would be so fabulous to try and have a Māori hospital in the future, and just because this government is saying that it's not going to happen in the next 3 years, it doesn't mean to say that it won't happen. Māori will continue to champion this idea of having a Māori hospital and having Māori health services, and in that way we will probably be able to create opportunities for more Māori doctors, more Māori nurses, more Māori physios, more Māori chefs, creating Māori kai for patients in Māori hospitals, all driven by tikanga. And where does the tikanga come from? Well, it comes from those Komatua who have the sort of courage and the mātauranga Māori to create safe spaces for us going forward.
That was James Henare, Māori Research Centre Director, Associate Professor Marama Muru Lanning, and Senior Research Fellow Dr. Hilary Lapsley, on the government scrapping Te Aka Whai Ora.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, Ne te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kororo mai ki o mō tēnei rā, that's a wrap on the Monday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Ex-Simon Court, Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki, Chairperson Catherine De La Hunte, Climate Justice Taranaki Spokesperson Urs Signer, Asthma and Respiratory Foundation Māori Community Liaison Sharon Pehema, and James Henare, Māori Research Centre Director, Associate Professor Marama Muru Lenning, and Senior Research Fellow Dr. Hilary Lapsley. Ni rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is The Wonderful with Penny.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.